Wow. How many times am I going to have the privilege of saying, we're back at the Saratskin home? It's three times in like 4 months already. Okay, I'm sold on Muncie. Emily, you succeeded. For all the jokes about Muncie, I'm in. It's okay. You're right on time. You know that joke, what happens when the Lubavitcher Shliach goes out to Germany? They're exactly 2 hours late. It's like, I'm straight on time. Parsha Zemor is always the Parsha that is right around the time of Lag BaOmer. Shaila is, what's the connection between Parshas Emor and Lag BaOmer? It's a famous question that many of the Bali Chassidus, the Bali Ashkafa, ask. In Parshas Emor, we begin with the laws of the sanctity of the Kohanim. And specifically, we're introduced Emor va'amarta. Rashi says, Lahazer, G'dayla Malakatanim, that the adult Kohanim are obligated to teach their children not to become tamei meis. And this must reveal some sort of deep secret, because that's obviously not the only halacha of kedusha that pertains to a kohen. So why specifically tumas meis? Why is that where we begin teaching a little child kohen that you're a kohen, don't come in contact with a dead body? That's our second question. Third question is also a given very classic question, a very well-known question. Generally, a yard site is a sad day. It's a day where we remember the Nifter. Of course, Lag BaOmer is a tremendous day of Simcha, but for us, I think it's still, I don't want to say anything chas v'shalom not nice, but I think for those of us, especially those that were in Eretz Yisrael, in Meron, on that night a couple of years ago, it's still for us a day of sadness. But Be'etzem Lag BaOmer is a day of Simcha. And maybe it's appropriate that we're confronting the sadness, the tragedy of Meron, which we're all still living with. It's a day I'll never forget. Very, very, very dear, very close Talmud was in the pileup. He was pulled out in his life. He was saved, but his shoes were left behind. He had yellow shoes. And there's a picture. There's a picture of many people were pulled out by their shoes. There's a picture of the pile of shoes. And many of the shoes are black shoes. Come on, a lot of the people there were wearing, you know, Shabbos shoes. This particular Talmud was wearing yellow sneakers. So it was like a very... In a certain way, the word beautiful is coming to mind, but it's not really beautiful, but it's a fascinating picture of his yellow shoes in the pile of black shoes. And he's still living with the trauma of that day, of course. I think we all are. So how do we put these things together? How do we put together the tragedy of what happened in Meron, the simcha of Lag BaOmer? In general, it doesn't seem to be a zman of simcha, and yet we celebrate it with tremendous simcha. So this Gemara, I think probably many of you have heard this Gemara before, but it's kedai to repeat. In the aftermath of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, they started a yeshiva in Yavne. The yeshiva in Yavne was run by Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Gamliel was a descendant of David HaMelech, and he ran the yeshiva in a very particular way. He ran the yeshiva in a very exacting way. There was a guard at the door, and only people that were tochel kebaru, only people that were truly authentic, that their insides and their outsides matched, only those people were allowed to come into the yeshiva. Why did Rabbi Gamliel do this? Because Rabbi Gamliel thought in a very beautiful way that after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, we needed to have a type of Beis HaMikdash. a Beis HaMikdash of people. If we couldn't have the Kodesh HaKadoshim, so we would have the greatest tzaddikim. You could imagine such a yeshiva, the greatest tzaddikim sitting and learning in Yavne. Rav Gamliel felt this would be a tremendous inspiration for all of Klal Yisrael. You have to be careful when you say inspiration for the nation today. Yaakov Langer is going to come out of hiding and he's going to charge me for the trademark use. Inspiration for Klal Yisrael. Rav Gamliel thought everyone's going to see it. It's going to be amazing. It was a beautiful theory. Rav Gamliel also understood the danger of any machlokes in Klal Yisrael, especially at that time. As Klal Yisrael is beginning this journey into exile that's going to last for thousands of years, and it's very clear that the Chachamim were aware that they were about to embark on a journey that was going to take them thousands of years. We all know that the Seder in Bnei Brak, Rav Akiva, Rav Elazar ben Azariah, that whole Seder with the Chachamim was really a question that they had of how are we going to communicate to our Talmidim that they should be able to last and to thrive within Galus. That's why the climax of that story is when the Talmidim say, Higia Zman Kriya Shma Shel Shachris, that the Talmidim themselves understood that they were going to be able to tell the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim even into the next day, that they were going to be able to greet Mashiach with this story. So it was very clear that they were aware that this journey of exile was going to take thousands of years. And Rav Gamliel said there could be no machlokas. There's one leader, that's the way it is. And the Gemara tells us that Rav Yehoshua, the great sage Rav Yehoshua, who was of course not as senior as Rav Gamliel, had several machloksim with Rav Gamliel. And again, not chas v'shalom to disparage, we have to be so careful the way we speak about these tzaddikim, these are not small people. Rav Gamliel treated Rav Yehoshua quite harshly in an effort. Again, I just want to make sure we're absolutely clear. Not chas v'shalom in any way because he wasn't a tremendous balmidos, but in an effort to ensure the continued halachic line of Klal Yisrael, he wanted to make sure there was no machlokas, and so he treated Rav Yehoshua very harshly. There was one machlokas that they had, a Talmud. Doesn't matter, we're not going to get into the details. The details aren't important for right now. Of course, all the details are important, but for right now, the details aren't important. There was a Talmud who went to Rav Yehoshua. He said, Rebbe, how do we paskin in such a case? Rav Yehoshua told him how we paskin. That Talmud then went to Rav Gamliel and said, how do we paskin? Rav Gamliel said, we paskin differently. He said, oh, that's so interesting because Rav Yehoshua paskin differently. And it created a big machlokes. And Rav Gamliel called in Rav Yehoshua, and he treated Rav Yehoshua very harshly. And this was the beginning of a very fascinating tkufa in Klal Yisrael, where the Chachamim got together and they said, we're going to depose Rav Gamliel as Nasi. Now let's take a moment to understand this. Rav Gamliel was not just the Nasi of Klal Yisrael politically. He was in charge of the yeshiva. To be in charge of the yeshiva means, especially such a yeshiva, it means you're responsible for the continued education of Klal Yisrael. That's no small thing. To depose him as Nasi means going to Rav Gamliel and saying, we no longer trust you to lead. That's a very big deal. But that's what they did. They appointed Rav Elazar ben Azariah to become the Rosh Yeshiva, and he did. And he changed all the rules. Rav Elazar ben Azariah took away the guard. And they added hundreds of benches, either 400 benches or 700 benches, depending on which side of the Gemara you go with. Hundreds of benches, tons of people came to the Beis Medrash. On that day they learned Maseches Uktzin, they paskin many, many halachas, and forever in Shas, when it says, on that day, it's referring to the day that Rav Gamliel was deposed as Nasi, that Rav Elazar ben Azariah was made into the Nasi of the yeshiva, and they learned tremendous halachas. Rav Gamliel still came to the Beis Medrash. This was a machlokas l'shem shamayim. So Rav Gamliel came, but he was not accorded the same honor. They didn't necessarily paskin like him just because he said, this is what we do. And it became clear to Rav Gamliel that he needed to apologize to Rav Yehoshua, that he needed to make amends. He went to Rav Yehoshua's house. There's a whole story. We don't need to get into it. He noticed that the walls of Rav Yehoshua's house were black. He realized at that moment that Rav Yehoshua was a blacksmith. He said, I didn't realize you were a blacksmith. Rav Yehoshua criticized Rav Gamliel and he said, you don't know where people are holding, you don't know where people, what's going on in people's lives. He refused to forgive Rav Gamliel. Eventually he does forgive Rav Gamliel. And eventually they decide that they're going to reinstate Rabban Gamliel as Nasi, and he's going to split time between Rabban Gamliel and Rav Elazar ben Azariah. It's a fascinating Gemara. At the very, very, very end of the Gemara says something that's exceptionally strange, something we would not expect. At the very end of the Gemara says, who was that Talmud that started it all? Who was the Talmud that went to Rabban Gamliel and said, Rav Yehoshua paskins differently than you? It was none other than Rav Shimon bar Yochai. It's a surprise ending, for sure. But also, it seems to be a detail that's largely irrelevant to the story. But the way the Gemara says it, you know, you forgive me for saying it, I don't mean to be mezazel. I'm literally here on an NCSY Shabbaton, so I shouldn't make fun. But you know how like the end of every NCSY story is, and that girl was me? You know what I'm talking about? Like, and that boy was me. It's like the great reveal of every NCSY story. I was a messed up kid in high school, and then, you know, like, and that boy was me. And everyone in the audience is going, yeah, we know, it's an NCSY thing. We know how these stories go. So this seems to be the crescendo, the climax of the story. This is like the great reveal. We didn't even know what was going on. We didn't know the story was about Rav Shimon bar Yochai. If we were looking at Gemara, who would the story be about? The story was about Rav Yehoshua being embarrassed by Rav Gamliel. The story was about Rav Gamliel. The story is about Rav Elazar ben Azariah. You can even suggest that the story is about Rav Akiva, who's moving the pieces around to make sure that the right people are in place. The detail of the Talmud is largely irrelevant. So why in the world is the Gemara making it seem like this great reveal at the end of the story? And who was the Talmud? Who cares who the Talmud was? The story wasn't about the Talmud, unless maybe it was. Unless maybe we missed the point of the story. And really, this entire story was about this Talmud, which we wouldn't have expected. So how does this work? This is Gemara in Brachos. Some of you have heard of this Gemara in Brachos before. If you haven't, it's a classic Gemara. The Gemara talks about overcoming your Yetzirah. A person has to fight with their Yetzirah. We're here to grow. We're here to challenge ourselves. We're here to live out our highest values, to be the people that we want to be. We're in a room full of authentic, growth-oriented people. You don't have to be here tonight. We're here tonight because we want more, because we want to be the people that we know we have inside of ourselves. So what happens if you're fighting a losing battle with the Yetzirah? So the Gemara says the first thing to do is learn Torah. Okay, so you learn Torah, you go to a shir, but you're still battling with your Yetzirah. So the Gemara says, say Kriya Shema. Okay, so a person says Kriya Shema, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. They're connecting themselves to the unity of all of things in this world. They're searching for the godliness even within their greatest moments of trials and tribulations. The Gemara says if that doesn't work, there's a last resort. It's not the first resort, it's the last resort. The last resort is to think about your Yom HaMisa. I think every Rebbe who says this Gemara tells the story of Alfred Nobel. You know the story of Alfred Nobel? Alfred Nobel, of course, made the... Yes, very good. The Nobel Peace Prize. Why did he do that? Not just the Nobel Peace Prize, the Nobel Prize. Why did he do that? Because Alfred Nobel was the inventor of dynamite. Dynamite was a very... what's the word I'm looking for? It was not a very controllable substance, and so it often used to explode and kill people. And Alfred Nobel was thought to be in this dynamite plant that he had when the dynamite plant exploded, and everyone inside of it was killed. Alfred Nobel was away on vacation. He got the newspaper, and the newspaper had his obituary, because they thought he was dead. Imagine reading your own obituary. News of my death has been greatly exaggerated. Pick up the newspaper, and you see, I'm in it, and I'm dead. So he's reading his own obituary, and it's talking about who Alfred Nobel was. And it said that Alfred Nobel was responsible for the creation of dynamite, and thousands of people have died because of him. And he did not want that to be his legacy, so he created the Nobel Prize so that most people, when they hear the name Alfred Nobel today, they go, Nobel Prize. Very few people go, dynamite. Except for the Rebbeim, who teach everyone this story so that everyone goes, oh yeah, the dynamite story. So now, happens to be Kala Achar Yad, he's known for the dynamite. So think about your Yom HaMisa, how do you want to be remembered? This is the Gemara. So the Balei Chassidus ask, if that's the most effective way of doing it, so then why is that the last resort? It works. If you have an atom bomb and you want to kill something, just drop the atom bomb. The person isn't. You can imagine it'd be like a very. It could be like a very spiritual thing. No. I'll make up a case. Probably not relevant to anybody here. But imagine there was a boy that you didn't talk to in high school, and now that you're back from seminary, you have a taiva. Maybe I should. Maybe I shouldn't. By the way, for the 30% of you that just gave yourself away right now, I just want to say thank you very much for letting me know who you are. Yeah, maybe I should, maybe I shouldn't. You find yourself, and then you think about your Yom HaMisa. How do I want to be remembered? It works. So why don't you jump to it right away? So the Baal Chassidus say as follows. Death is a dangerous thing. Death is a dangerous thing. Yiddishkeit is a religion of ubachat abachayim. We don't spend time thinking about death. In fact, in Yiddishkeit, really, really, we don't even believe in death. We don't really even believe in death. We're a religion that believes in tchias hamesim, which means death is a temporary state. If it wasn't for the sin of Adam Arishon, nobody would have ever died to begin with. Death is a cosmic accident. All things have life. And a yid should be connected to life itself. This is what Chazal mean. The Gemara in Taina says, Yaakov Avinu lo meis. What does it mean, Yaakov Avinu lo meis? So Rashi says that it really means literally Yaakov Avinu didn't die. And that when the Pasuk tells us that the Egyptians embalmed Yaakov Avinu, it was really all a fake. And Yaakov Avinu didn't die. But al pi hashkafa, what it means is that Yaakov Avinu was not a person who lived with death. There are people that live with death. Some people get a thrill. I don't know who's in the room, so it could be I'm going to insult somebody here. I don't mean to. Some people live with a thrill of death. Like, you have guys in yeshiva, some guys speaking, not all boys, but some boys speak this way. They go, I would love to go skydiving. I'm not a person who would love to go skydiving, but I want to understand. So I ask these boys, I go, help me understand what plummeting to the ground from thousands of feet in the air will do. So like, it's a rush. You feel, what's the word? So, alive. The brush with death makes a person feel alive. I won't say who, but there's a Rav in this community. I'm not going to say who, but there's a Rav in this community that many years ago, I'm not going to tell you his name, there's a Rav in this community, a chash of a Rav, who has a long white beard. Many years ago, I asked him, is it mutter to go skydiving? He said, I hope it's mutter to go skydiving. I went skydiving, and he said he went skydiving with one of the great Rashi Yeshiva of the generation. And I was like, I was picturing, I was like, I just like, you know what I'm saying? Like with the beard splits like in the air. There's a guy in my neighborhood, has a long beard. He jogs on the side of the highway. He's like a Haredi guy. He jogs on the side of the highway and his beard like splits like Forrest Gump. And I can imagine this Rosh Hashiva like flying through the air. You have people that people love going on roller coasters. There are people that, they have a mission, bungee jumping, all the crazy things. I saw now they have a new thing that they give you wings, that you wear a suit that has wings. You know what I'm talking about? You wear a suit and you jump off a cliff. It's called cliff diving. I'm a shugana people. Why? Because there are people that they live with a certain fear of death, and the confrontation with death makes a person feel alive. There are people like this. I mean to insult anyone here. I'm not saying, Chas v'Shalom, there's something wrong with you. If you're the girl that likes going on roller coasters and Great Adventure on Pesach, I'm not saying, I'm just saying it's an interesting thing to think about why you like to do that. Because al pi teva, you would not think that that's a normal thing. The bechina of living with death is Esav. Esav says, Hine anaychi hoylech lamos. I'm going to die. He lives with the notion of death. There are people that live with a death consciousness. So what does Esav say? Esav says, Yaakov Avinu lo meis, you're a person who doesn't deal with death, you're alive, ubacharta b'chayim, but I'm a person who lives with the consciousness of death, therefore I have no need for the b'chayra. What's going on over here? Hina anaychi holech lamas, I'm going to die, so I have no need for the b'chayra. What's the connection between Esav selling the b'chayra to Yaakov Avinu because he had a consciousness of death? So we know that until the Chet HaEgel, who was supposed to be the Kohanim? Kohanim were supposed to be the Bechor, the firstborns were supposed to be the Kohanim. Until the Chet HaEgel, the firstborns were supposed to be the Kohanim. They were supposed to be the ones that were serving in the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash is called a place of Chaim. In the Beis HaMikdash, there's no notion of death. There's no notion of death. So Esav was telling Yaakov Avinu, it's not appropriate for me to be working in the Beis HaMikdash. Hinei anoichi hoilech lamos. I'm aware of my mortality. And say a maisa with the Alter Rebbe. The Alter Rebbe was being interrogated in jail in Petersburg, and the guard held a gun to his head, and the guard threatened to kill him. The interrogator threatened to kill him, and the Alter Rebbe was not fazed at all. And the interrogator asked the Alter Rebbe, said, "How could you not be fazed by this?" He said, "You believe in many gods and one world, so death is the end. I believe in one God and many worlds. So even if I die, death is just a part of life. After this world, there's an Olam HaNeshamos. After Olam HaNeshamos, there's a notion of Tchias HaMeisim. The soul can't die because the soul is life. It doesn't even make sense. If you think about it, the soul can't die. The body could die because the body only borrows life from the soul. But the soul can't die any more than salt can go bad. If salt can go bad, what do you know about it? It's not salt. If life could die, then it's not life. Alive can stop because alive is a condition where the body is borrowing life from the soul. Esav is a physical being. So Esav lives with a consciousness of death. Because from the perspective of the physical, one day the physical will end. But from the perspective of the neshama, from Yaakov Avinu, the perspective of the neshama is what death? There's no notion of death. Death is an accident. Death doesn't make any sense. Why in the world would I believe in death? Yaakov Avinu lo meis, so bacharta b'chayim. A person stands between their nefesh elokis and their nefesh ha'bahamis. A person has a godly soul, a person has an animal soul. Which one are we? The truth is, really, we're the godly soul. But we could act like the animal soul. So bacharta b'chayim, a person needs to choose to live with the consciousness of life. The emes is, we do this naturally. I'll give you an example. Again, we forget sometimes, but it's a beautiful example. One of the boys in yeshiva was asking me, he wasn't sure if he believes in God or doesn't believe in God, and he was going through something. So I said, "Tell me, do you believe in love or do you believe in chemicals?" He said, "What do you mean?" So I said, "Well, do you believe that you only feel love because when you're with this person, you secrete serotonin? So you don't really believe in love. Do you believe in serotonin?" So he goes, "Yeah, I don't think I believe in love. I think I believe in serotonin." I said, "You're going to get married?" He said, "I hope." I said, "When you get down on one knee to propose, you're going to say, 'Marry me. Nobody makes me secrete serotonin like you.'" So he said, "No, but I wouldn't be wrong." So I said, "Perhaps. But I don't know any girl that if she knew you were really thinking that, would say yes." Because the serotonin is the guf. The love is the neshama. We naturally understand that the relationship that we have with each other is not just chemicals. The chemicals are a byproduct. It's because I love you that I secrete serotonin. It's not that I secrete serotonin and that's a raya that I love you. Like, the love is from the serotonin. Chas v'shalom to say something like that. A person doesn't look at art and think to themselves, we have beautiful pieces of art here. A person doesn't look at the art and say, "That's color." No, there's something beauty. There's something beautiful about it. There's a neshama, there's a chayos that exists within every guf. We don't really live in the dimension of the guf until it comes to hard things. And then we say something like, you've said this before maybe, "It's hard to talk to Hashem because I can't see Him." But the emes is, even right now, who's talking to who? Are we talking to our bodies? Of course not. Our bodies are not talking to each other. We know this because if chas v'shalom you were missing a limb, you wouldn't be less of a person. It's not our bodies talking to each other. In fact, very often, it's the body that's getting in the way of the real communication. It's when two people can just be still. I don't want to say this. I'm going to say it, but I don't want to say it because I don't want it to become the topic and I don't want this to be the taking away point. I was talking to somebody today who's a wonderful person and I love them dearly and they're amazing. And Nebuch, they have an addiction to their phone. And we were talking about real things. And this person kept getting messages. And I know that there's an urgency in their life and they have a lot going on, Baruch Hashem. We were talking about very real things. And in the middle of talking, this person goes to me, "One minute," and answers a text. I wasn't hurt. I wasn't hurt even a little bit. I know this person loves me and I love this person. But I was like, chaval, man, just put it away. The goof is getting in the way of the conversation. It was such a good conversation, a vulnerable conversation, a real conversation, two people really sharing with each other. You don't need that right now. That's a goof getting in the way of the neshama. That's that old, it was a cartoon, I think it's a Reader's Digest cartoon, of there's a mother who's washing dishes and there's a little girl who's trying to get her mother's attention. Mommy, mommy, listen to me. And the mother goes, I'm listening. No, mommy, mommy, listen to me. And the mother goes, I'm listening. And then the girl goes, mommy, mommy, pay attention to me with your eyes. Right? There's a person, I'm listening. You're not listening. Listening is present. Listening is neshama. It's one neshama speaking to another. It's not a goof. It's not a goof perspective. So now we can understand a very deep thing. What is a kohen? Kohen took over for a bechor. Esav says to Yaakov Avinu, you belong in the Beis HaMikdash. I'm a person who's hinei anochi halach lamos. You're Yaakov Avinu lomes. So when we're raising a child kohen, and every one of us is a child kohen, or mamleches kohen megay kadosh, what do we teach little Jewish children? Emor va'amarta, this week's parsha, what do we teach little Jewish children? There's a security that we must give to our children. There's a... I'm going to say this, maybe it won't make sense, maybe I'll speak around it and hopefully we'll fall into it together. There's a tragic moment in every child's life. Every one of us went through it. The tragic moment is, and usually it happens, hopefully a little bit later, but 5, 6, 7 years old, where a child becomes aware of their own mortality. They become aware that it's not necessarily going to be okay, and the only way that it will be okay is if they're part of the group. That's the most important thing. A child is unique until they become aware of their own frailty. And then they trade in their uniqueness for conformity. Because being part of the group is safe. So the example that I use, but I'm seeing it now with my son, but a couple years ago my daughter told me, Abba, don't get me any more unicorn things. And I love buying unicorn things for my daughter. First, I'm a girl dad. I have 5 girls. And I leaned into it. I own it. I'm not going to lie. When my first daughter was born, I was a man who was expecting to raise men. And my first daughter was born, and I was like, okay, 0-for-1. You know, but like, I love her, and she's great. The Rabbanu Shalom had a different plan. And then my second daughter was born. When my fourth daughter was born, I had a crisis of faith. I stopped, you know, my belief in the Rabbanu Shalom was wavering. I'm so happy. Every one of my children is amazing. But until my 6th child, I didn't have a boy. And when I finally did have a boy, walking down the streets of Ramat Beit Shemesh, it's like I was a hero. It's like, you did it, finally, congratulations. I was like, I have 5 healthy children. What's wrong with you? And especially the Sephardim. The Sephardi fathers came over to me. They're like, L'chaim, you finally did. It was like they felt badly for me, these Sephardi fathers. I love them. I love all my daughters. I became a girl dad. Now I'm raising my son to be a little girl. I mean, he's like sad, and I'm like, help me unpack the emotion that you're feeling right now. Let's point to it together, you know? I have no idea how I got into this. I'll get back there in 1 second. So my daughter says to me, I love buying her unicorn things, and my daughter says, Abba, no more unicorn things. Unicorns are for babies. I know she still loves unicorns. But what is she really saying? I don't want to be the girl in the class that has a unicorn knapsack. I don't want to be the girl that has unicorn stickers all over her. Do they still call it a trapper keeper? You know what I'm talking about? Oh my God. Do you know what I'm talking about? I feel badly, but we're dating ourselves. What do they call it now? A binder? A trapper keeper, no? All right, it's a Beseder. Back in the 80s, I guess looking back on it, the 80s was a messed up time. So I don't know if trapper keeper is a normal word, but she wanted to be that girl on her notebook to have all the pictures of the unicorns. Why? Because it separates her. But really what separates her is what makes her awesome, no? If every one of us could really be our true life, like the life of each person is unique, what would happen if everybody in this room was actually authentic? This room would be lit up. And especially, and maybe this is not such a nice thing to say, but it's one of the areas that we need to work on in our community, especially when we force girls into boxes and tell them this is exactly what you need to be. Every single one of us needs to be some type of therapist, a speech therapist, a physical therapist, an occupational therapist, aqua therapist, which is really just a fancy name for a lifeguard. We could be a horse therapist. You could be a therapist, right? Every one of us needs, or a teacher. But then you're not going to have enough money, so probably not. Maybe you could be a therapist teacher, right? So we make sure that everybody has to fit into the same box, and it's very safe. And we use fear to make sure that people fit into the boxes, right? Because if you're not exactly like this, then you're not going to get a shidduch. And so we use fear to keep people in this state of conformity. It's a state of misa. What would happen if everybody in this room was allowed to do whatever they wanted? And what if just for a moment we said, let's put aside the practical. I'm not saying we should, but what if just for a moment we said to people, we'll worry about the money later. Maybe we'll lower our standards of what we need in our community, but you'll be allowed to really, truly express yourself. This room would be lit up because every one of us would be able to be our unique self. Rather than live with the fear of what happens if I act. Do you know how many girls have come to me over the years and said, am I really supposed to act dumber than I am because I don't want to intimidate a boy? That's a real thing that people are told. That's crazy. What's going to happen one day when you wake up and you go, oops, I said a smart thing? Like this is a normal thing to tell people in Shidduchim? Try to dumb it down so you don't intimidate people? I can't believe we're telling this to people. Be your authentic self. Show up and say Hineini. What type of craziness is this? I don't mean to just pick on a thing, and I'm not trying Chas v'Shalom to be negative, but I want you to know when my daughter was dating, I told her, you are awesome, just be yourself. And if you're yourself, you'll see that is attractive. It's not attractive when we stop being ourselves. Life is meant to be expressed. You're suppressing the greatest tool that you have, the greatest weapon that you have in your life. We could change the entire world if every one of us would be our unique selves. And by the way, you know what we do? The people that are unique are the people we really looked up to. And then people are like, well, I have to conform to be like those people. Those unique people don't want you to be like them. The Rebbeinu Shlom doesn't create doubles. We literally give the shmooze and then we tell, but you all got to be the same. It's a misa-oriented behavior. So we teach children, we teach these little kohanim, you have to be as the leaders of Klal Yisrael, as the teachers of Klal Yisrael, kisif se kohen yishmeru das, you have to be connected to Chai HaChaim. No Tumas Meis for you. That's the first, there's many halachas of Kedusha of a kohen, but the first one is stop believing in death. If you believe in death, you lose yourself. You're so afraid to be who you are because maybe I'm not going to be in the group and then maybe I'll be excluded and then maybe it'll be dangerous. You know what? It's better to be vulnerable and be alive than to be safe and to be dead. It's not a small thing. It takes a tremendous amount of courage to be who you are. How many years, if I wish I could go back and tell my 15-year-old self one thing, I would tell my 15-year-old Steph, stop caring so much what other people think and be who you are, not with arrogance, just with a sense of like menucha. Just be yourself. We're trying to raise our children this way. And then, of course, we have to tell some children, because they are unique, just tone down your uniqueness so the menahelet doesn't notice. But really, I want to celebrate these kids. I want to tell these kids, you're amazing, you're awesome. Go be a meshugana a little bit. You know, there's nothing wrong with being a meshugana. All those NCSY stories from those rabbis that are up there, they're all saying what? I was a meshugana in high school. So clearly you were a meshugana, and look what happened. I was in Merkaz Daf Yomi davening the other day, and so I caught Rabbi, you know who Merkaz Daf Yomi is? Rabbi Eli Stefanski, 13,000 people a day listening to the daf. It's on my block. So I was there, and he was in America giving the Daf Yomi shir, but this chevra of guys, they're so into him that they go to the Merkaz Daf Yomi, they go to this place to watch him give shir. Meaning, even though he's in America, they broadcast the shir into the room. They could see it online, but they go to sit together. It's a beautiful thing. So I was there, and I heard him tell the following story. This Meshugana, Rav Eli Stefanski, when he was in high school, they were in a camp, on a campus, and the whole chevra got together and said, we're going to make sure that we all wake up for shachris together. And one guy in the group said, I'm not part of it. I'm not part of this thing. There was like, if you don't do it, then you have to like do something, and he's like, no, I'm not part of this. And they were very upset at him. Stefanski said, I was very upset at him that he wasn't participating in the group. So one morning he's going to Shachris, and what does he find on the camp? A horse. So he said, oh, I have a good idea. He takes the horse, brings it back to the bunk, brings the horse into the bunk, puts the horse's head right by this guy's face who's sleeping, wakes the guy up. The guy wakes up, and he's looking into a horse's face. And he's telling them the story, and everybody knows. Stefanski always tells these crazy stories about what he did. You know, there's a reason he's giving shir to 13,000 people a day. It's because he was a meshugana. It's because he was a meshugana. It's because his unique light was always, Baruch Hashem, held in its unique way. And you'll say, but isn't there a negative impact? Yes, you know what? There sometimes is a negative impact. And people learn. We have to teach our children, the Kohanim, we have to teach them, be people of life. Be alive. Don't run to death. If certain kids, I feel badly for these kids. I see them every summer on NCSY Kol. They're the good kids. The bad kids on NCSY Kol I love. Because they're meshugana. But you have these kids, they're like, I do everything right. I'm a good boy. I'm like, what type of trauma do you have in your life that you don't know how to break a rule? And they're like, but I do everything right. I'm like, it must be exhausting. It must be an exhausting life, constantly trying. Girls, could you imagine sitting for that long every single day and learning and paying attention? No, you're shaking your head, no, so you're a person. I'm not talking about the ADHD. I'm just talking about stam. A person sometimes blurts something out. No, I have to do everything right. That's an exhausting life. What in the world happened to you that you're suppressing this natural exuberance that you have? We have to teach our children not to do that. You know why we celebrate Rosh Hashanah Bar Yochai's life the way we do? Because Rosh Hashanah Bar Yochai was Kula Chaim. So on the Hilula of Rashbi, we light huge fires. It's the biggest yahrzeit candle in the world. And we say on the day of Rosh Hashanah Bar Yochai's Patira, we celebrate life. Because Rosh Hashanah Bar Yochai was a person who lived beyond death. He lived with a concept of true life. And I want to share with you something in the Zohar, but I think it's, I don't think what I'm about to say is controversial at all, but it's something that I think we need to understand. If we're talking about Chaim, we're not just talking about being unique, we're talking about being unique together. The Zohar HaKadosh says as follows. In the times of Rosh Hashanah Bar Yochai, there was once a drought. And Rosh Hashanah Bar Yochai wanted to daven that the drought should end. So he started davening and he said, Hine matov u'manoyim sheves achim gam yachad. He said it over and over again until it began to rain. What's the Zohar HaKadosh teaching us? Listen to the words. Hine matov umanoim, how good it is and how pleasant it is. Sheves achim gam yachad. When people sit together, when Jews sit together. That's a beautiful thing. Wednesday night I was in Ben-Gurion Airport. And I was coming from seminary, even though there was no seminary that night, I accidentally went to the seminary, and then I went from the seminary to Ben-Gurion, and I got there early, and I walked in. I don't know if you know, in Ben-Gurion, right when you walk in to the right, there's like a little Lubavitch stand where they put on tefillin on you, no matter what time of day it is, and so there's like a little like shul over there. So I went in to see if we could get a ma'ariv together. So there were two Jews there. So I said, ma'ariv? So they said, yeah, people will come. So I decided I wanted to be proactive. I'm a gold member, so I get to go to the King David Lounge. So I didn't want to like sit forever. I want to go to the lounge and hang out. So I decided I'm going to recruit for Ma'ariv. So I stood, you know, at the end of the ramp there, and I stood, and anybody that walked by, I said, do you believe in Ma'ariv? And sometimes people just walked by. And then some Haredi people didn't believe in Ma'ariv, and then some... But anybody that guy said, do you believe in Ma'ariv? We're going to dive in Ma'ariv. And we had the best Ma'ariv Minyan. We had the most beautiful Ma'ariv Minyan. A Chassidish guy davened for the Amud, two Lubavitchers, a couple of people that I think were secular that came and put on yarmulkes and really davened. We had 12 Jews, not one of us looked alike. And I really wanted, not for social media, not for anything, not for WhatsApp status, not for Mikamcha Yisrael, I really wanted a picture of us. I really did. I wanted to say to the Chevra, like, can we just get together and take a picture? Like, we never in a zillion years would have ever davened Ma'ariv together if we weren't in Ben-Gurion Airport. I didn't have the cards. I didn't know what the chassidish guy was going to think if I said it, and I didn't want him to be like, I'm not going to be in your stupid picture. So I didn't say anything. I wish there was like a better end of the story. Like I could pull out that picture. Like there's no good. And that boy was me. There's no good end to the story. But I was davening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elkeinu Hashem Echad, and I was like, this is Echad. Echad means that we could see the godliness in every single one of us. People who believe in Chaim understand that there is only one Chaim. That when we say Klal Yisrael's Guf Echad, what we mean to say is we are one soul shining into many bodies, but our bodies even are united because there's one soul shining into every single Jewish body. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, because he was the Bechina of Chaim, when he saw that there was no Shefa coming down into the world, he says over and over again, Hine matov umanoim shevesachem gam yachad. Maran Gittin tells us, Kedai hu Rav Shimon lismach alav b'shas adchak. A certain halacha of how you have to make a get, when you sign. And the Gemara says, in a situation that's complicated, a person could be soimech on Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. And the Balei Chassidus tell us that this means, shas adchak means galus. That in galus, a yid needs to live like Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. In Golus, when we all feel separate from each other, a yid needs to remember we're all together. We're all together. Hine mato v'manoim shavazachem gam yachad. There's one chayim. That's what it's really all about. So let's go back just for a moment to that story. Rabbi Gamliel has a beautiful vision for Klal Yisrael. I'm going to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, not with karbanos, but with Tamidei Chachamim. But there's a young boy, and he's a Talmud, and he's not on the level of Rav Akiva or of Yoshua, he's up and coming. And he notices, because he's sensitive, he notices that even though everyone's behaving appropriately, there's not love. There's things underneath the surface that are not being dealt with. There's resentment and fear. And this Talmud says, we have to make these things come to the surface. Because if we really want achdus, we can't pretend that everything's okay. You know, sometimes you have a couple that if you see them on the outside, you think this couple has beautiful shalom bayis. But on the inside, there's so much pain because nobody's talking about what's going on. I had a Talmud once who came to me and he said, my parents got divorced last year. I said, did you see it coming? He goes, I never saw it coming. I said, what do you mean, you never saw it coming? That's impossible. What do you mean, you never saw it coming? Because my parents never fought. So in my head, I said, that should be your first clue. Because couples do fight. It doesn't mean that they don't love each other, but sometimes stuff has to come up. Sometimes we have to have uncomfortable conversations. People get triggered. We all carry explosive stuff inside. It doesn't mean, chas v'shalom, that there's something wrong with your relationship. Adar abba. If things are coming up and you're working through things together, that's a vehicle for bringing people closer together. Like the Rambam explains on the Pasuk, Lotisnas achichal b'vavecho. There's a lot of people that are walking around with hatred for their brothers and sisters in their heart because they're unwilling to talk about it. That's why in Eretz Yisrael we have so many hafganot. And I'm not even joking. We don't know how to talk to each other, so we only know how to scream at each other. And we know. You should know. I was talking to this cab driver. You know, there's something beautiful in Eretz Yisrael you don't have here in America. In America, if you get into an Uber, what do you talk about? First of all, nothing. Because he wants to get a 5-star rating. He doesn't really want to be talking to you, and you don't really want to be talking to him. But I got in this cab going from Tomer Devorah to Ben-Gurion. I sit down in the cab, and the first thing the cab driver says to me is, what do you think about Ben-Gvir? So I'm like, what? And also, I don't want to say the wrong thing, because it's already an Israeli taxi cab, so that's much worse than skydiving. You know, like it's already, it's 50-50 every time you get in one of those things. So I was quiet, and he starts going off about we have to go slowly, and any changes that we make, the entire country needs to be together, and we were on the verge of civil war. And I'm like, I'm just listening. I'm like, mm-hmm. Just like, okay, say they're good, do your thing. Just keep your eyes on the road, you know. And he's like, because he keeps turning to me. Like, and by, you know, every time like a driver turns, and they like, so focus, you know. And then he said a very smart thing. He said a lot of things I agree with. But then he said a very smart thing. He said, if we don't start getting along, you know what's going to happen. The Arabs are going to attack us. So I didn't know what he meant by that. I said, what do you mean? He goes, not a man who's wearing a yarmulke. He goes, every time we fight inside, Hashem sends the Arabs to get us back together. If we're fighting, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to remind us we're all one family. I'm like, okay, you're the Rebbe. I should be driving the cab. That's what Rav Shem Bar Yochai looked. He looked at it, he's like, this is not good. Yes, Rav Gamliel's the Nasi, and yes, everybody's following his psak halacha. Everything on the outside looked good. But he knew that Rav Yehoshua was hurt, and he knew that Rav Akiva wasn't happy with the way that Rav Yehoshua was being treated. Everybody knew what was going on. So there was one Talmud, and this is who the story is really about. One Talmud who says, if we believe in life, then we believe in unity. If we believe in unity, then there has to be true shalom. And sometimes things need to fall apart. So he dafka goes to Rav Yehoshua and says, what are you paskin? And then he dafka goes to Rav Gamliel. And he starts the fight, right? Isn't it that Talmud? It's not. It's not that he started the fight. He revealed what was already going on under the surface. That's the whole bechina of Kabbalah to begin with. The whole yusayt of desire is to teach us the secrets of Torah that are going on underneath the surface. So that's what Rav Shem Bar Yochai did. He brought it all up. And that's why at the very end of the Gemara, after Rav Gamliel and Rav Yehoshua finally make Shalom and Rav Gamliel becomes Nasi, the Gemara says, and who was that boy? It was none other than Rav Shem Bar Yochai, the great person of Shalom in Klal Yisrael. Because if you believe in Chaim, then you believe in unity. Raya Mehemna, we'll finish with this. Raya Mehemna in Zaire, it says that the Geula will come in the merit of this Sefer, the Zohar HaKadosh. Isn't it an interesting thing that today people are learning Sifrei Kabbalah and Sifrei Chassidus, the Sfarim of the Gra, the Sfarim of the Maral, the Sfarim of the Ramchal. Today the whole world talks about this notion of Pnimiyas HaTorah. It's an amazing thing. Why is that? What changed? Why was it that not so long ago, in yeshivas, what did they learn? Gemara. And today, in yeshivas, of course, we learn Gemara. But you see, the Talmidim are going, but Rebbe, I want more. I want to be able to understand why I'm doing this. I'm tired, Rebbe. I'm going to daven, but I'm tired of just davening. I'm tired of just saying the words. I want to connect to Hashem. That's what we're hearing everywhere we go, right? That's what you girls said it not that long ago. Everybody wants to hear something deeper. We're a generation, we are, as Rabbi Nachman said, a dor mitsuyon. We are a phenomenal generation because we are not satisfied with just knowing the surface. Why? Because as we get closer and closer to the coming of Mashiach, we need to kill death. We need to be able to see to the pnimius of the thing and not just the chitzanius of the thing. People are looking and saying marriages are falling apart more than ever before. Maybe that's true. But in a certain way, marriages are getting stronger than ever before. People are more vulnerable with each other than ever before. People are learning new techniques of how to stay together. People are learning that maybe grit and resilience are important, but maybe there's something underneath the surface that also needs to be there. You know, I know my grandmother, Aleha Shalom, she never remarried after my grandfather passed away. My grandfather passed away quite young, and she never remarried. And she went out on a couple of dates, and I once asked her, Grandma, why didn't you get remarried? And she said to me, I went out on a couple of dates, it was very uncomfortable, because even though your grandfather wasn't alive, I was still married. And, you know, it's interesting, because my grandfather passed away when I was very young, but the stories they tell about my grandmother and my grandfather were not stories of a deep love between them. If anything, the stories are exactly the opposite. They had a very old school marriage. My grandmother served my grandfather in many ways. It wasn't like what you would expect. But it's very clear to me that my grandmother had, and I don't really understand that, I wasn't on the inside of their marriage, but she had a tremendous ahava for him. Because if it was only that she was loyal to him, then when he passed away, she would have been loyal to somebody else. But there was a pnimius there. There was a connection. That's the connection that we're all searching for today. So you could look and you could say on the outside, but so much of it is falling apart. But sometimes it needs to fall apart. Sometimes it needs to fall apart on a generational level in order for us to learn things. And this is why we're learning these Sfarim. The Sfarim of Rav Shem Bar Yochai, because we're tired of just of learning the menu without tasting the food. We're tired of learning the halacha without being introduced to the one who wants these halachas. And this is what brings about kedai hu lismaych harushim bar yochai b'shasadcha. It's kedai for us in these times to follow the path of Hashem bar yochai. So how can we be soivel? How can we understand the tragedy that happened in Meron? Of course, none of us could possibly understand why anything happens, and it would be ridiculous and it would be insane to try to attempt any explanation. But one thing I can say is this. If we're going to be Jews who believe in Lag BaOmer, and we should be, then it is kedai for us to be Saimech on Rav Shimon Bar Yochai in this very difficult tkufa. To somehow find meaning in this pain, to somehow see past the veil of Misa, even though there are probably people in this room, and I'm certainly one of them, who know people who passed away in that tragedy. But I believe Be'emunah Shlema in Tchiyas HaMesim. I believe Be'emunah Shlema in Yaakov Avinu Lomes, that those Kohanim Gedolim that were nifter on that day in that holy place are as alive today as they ever were, even though we miss them terribly. And that's not something that we just do on Lag BaOmer. That's something that we need to bring to our entire lives. That there are times in our Yiddishkeit where we feel dead, and we should know that there's a bechina of tchiyas hamesim in that moment of misa. There are times that I pashut don't want to daven, and I'm saying the words and I feel absolutely nothing, and you should know that even though there's a feeling of misa, there's a deep sense of life that is living and is buried within that moment. That when relationships, you're in a relationship, a boy told me today, Rebbe, I was on the verge of getting engaged to this girl, and I broke up with her, and he's mamish, he's in a hard place right now. He's in a hard place right now. But there's a tremendous amount of life that exists within the pain that he's feeling right now. Whenever we're confronting that sense of death, we have to remind ourselves to have emunah in the life that exists within all of those painful moments. And Be'ezus Hashem, we should be finished with this very soon. In these, we can't even say final moments anymore before Mashiach. It's final seconds. It's not even moments. It's milliseconds. Historically speaking, we are milliseconds away from Mashiach coming. But we have to remind ourselves in an actionable way. Hinei matov manam shevesachem gam yachar.